Is that a Dante cover?
I see him everywhere.
Yeah, is that everywhere. What that is that all what that blacksmith was singing?
All I see is his face everywhere, dude.
Hey, I got a question before you get into why the red? Why is he always wearing this red cape outfit?
Ooh, I don't know. I think it was probably the fashion at the time. Okay. Stephanie, if you're listening, I'd be curious. I don't know.
Dante, I just have this feeling like maybe it got described that way. It's funny because like every image you see of him, he's basically wearing kind of the same thing. And you kind of wonder if like that was a description of him once and then it just got repeated over and over and over.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I see is that Blake illustrating the Divine Comedy maintains continuity by having Dante dressed in red, which denotes experience, and Virgil in blue denoting the spirit. So it's possible.
Okay. But I mean, this one image of Dante I saw is from 1495 from Botticelli, which is pre-Blake.
Yeah, no,
I don't expect you to know.
I think the idea is that and this is Reddit, but because crimson was the most expensive color, men of your family would wear a lot of crimson in public, especially on more formal occasions.
Flashy. Yeah. It's like wearing a Rolly.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, not a damn thing changes.
Yeah.
Right? Like we talked about. I got the sweet sound. I got that sweet poetry.
Me and my homies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Me and my boys, we've been writing that sweet poetry for you. I mean, but these medievals, they're so different from us. I mean, it's like they are and they aren't.
Yeah.
And it's wild to think about that. There's somebody living in a town in Africa right now with 50 people in it, a village.
Yeah.
And like and there's nothing wrong with this.
No.
But in the 14th century, Dante was living in a cosmopolitan city.
Right.
Of 100,000 people.
Right.
Like,
right.
Time is not what it appears to be.
No.
History is not what it appears to be.
No. But you know, at 1290, whatever, in Florence, 100,000 people, you know, it smelled crazy in there.
Yeah, you had to say it. I don't think that's fair. Yeah. I think the medievals were more hygienic. I think you've been brainwashed by a lot of Enlightenment propaganda.
Well, Brad. I don't know about bathing. I think the idea that they didn't bathe is exaggerated, but I don't know what they were doing with all their shit.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. I do know what you're saying.
This is what I'm going to bring my day job into it. I know, you know, you got 100,000 people. That's a lot of shit.
Oh, yeah. That's a great point.
Yeah.
I don't know. And Brad's day job is he's a shit man.
Yeah, I'm a shit man. I'm a shit man by day. Yeah.
I'm a shit man by day and a podcaster by night.
You know, real Brett, quick on that, what is funny is like, because there is a sort of a gallows humor in that industry. I work in design, helping to rehab sewers. There's you'll be sitting in a meeting. There's a big facility where they process all the wastewater down here. And you'll literally be sitting in a meeting with like 40 people with like honchos and things. And they'll refer to it as the shit plant. Just because that's what everybody calls it. You can't write that in a memo, but like that's just what it's
what
you're
it
talking
is.
To a guy wearing a tie. He's like, yeah, so down at the shit plant, we
that rocks.
So funny. Anyway,
inside
baseball. Thanks, you guys.
Help us get Brad out of his job. Continue to support the pod. We appreciate it. You guys rock. You're the best. We really appreciate the support, truly.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for following up with us. Here we are in the after dark. Talking about Dante and what else we got about Dante.
Well, let's bash out like what happened to Dante's corpse. You know what's funny is I had a joke for the outro that didn't get on the main episode.
Oh, no.
I was gonna say, as the Frenchman said, hell truly is other people, but Dante got there first.
Right. That's pretty good. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Hell is other people. That's what would hell be? What would Dante's hell be if it wasn't, if it didn't have people in it? This is what I mean. The people construct hell.
Right, 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 right. Yeah.
Very cheeky little thing for Sartre to write.
Yes.
Yeah, but I have bits and bobs about what happened to his body after he died. So let's get into that.
Okay.
So in what happened to Dante's corpse?
What's the deal?
Mandelbaum.
You know, if you listen back to that, we both did it not pre-planned at all, but we both did it simultaneously.
Yeah. Very good translation, but also very funny. It's a Seinfeld reference for people who don't know.
Yeah.
In 1329, Bertrand du Puget, cardinal and nephew of Pope John the 22nd, classified Dante's Monarchia as heretical and sought to have his bones burned at the stake.
I love when they do shit to the... Go ahead.
Freaking rocks, dude. Catholicism is so metal. Even though these people were just Christians, they weren't thinking or were Catholics. They were just were Christians. Mm-hmm. Ostasio E. da Polenta and Pino della Tosa, allies of Puget, interceded to prevent the destruction of Dante's remains. Bernardo Bembo, praetor of Venice, erected a tomb for Dante in 1483. On the grave, a verse of Bernardo Canaccio, a friend of Dante, is dedicated to Florence. Parvi Florentia Mater Amoris, Florence, mother of little love.
Hmm.
They had a sentimentality about their cities that, I mean, it was like a nation. This was like entire identity. It would be like if you, I mean, I guess it's not totally dissimilar to somebody that's like, I'm going to be buried in Queens. I'm from fucking Queens, New York. I'm a Mets fan. My family's buried here. Yeah.
There are some places in like New York would be like that, but not every city is probably like that in America. Do you know what I mean? No. Yeah.
No. Yeah. But people, it's not unthinkable.
Right.
Yeah. Florence eventually came to regret having exiled Dante.
Mm.
The city made repeated requests for the return of his remains. The custodians of the body in Ravenna refused, at one point going so far as to conceal the bones in a false wall of the monastery.
Mm.
We can't have them coming to get Dante's bones. Florence built a tomb for Dante in 1829 in the Basilica of Santa Croce. That tomb has been empty ever since, with Dante's body remaining in Ravenna. The front of his tomb in Florence reads, Onorate l'altissimo poeta, which roughly translates as honor the most exalted poet, and is a quote from the fourth canto of the Inferno. So, and I didn't read that bit in Inferno, but he's, I mean, there's a period where he just like blasts through all these other poets that are hugely important to him. Mm. And I think probably he was talking about Homer there, probably.
Yeah.
In 1945, the fascist government discussed bringing Dante's remains to the Valtellina Redoubt, the Alpine Valley in which the regime intended to make its last stand against the Allies. The case was made that the greatest symbol of Italianness should be present at fascism's heroic end.
Hmm.
The fact that this guy's bones are still in the discussion. Yeah. Right. When it's like, oh, we have to go and finally get defeated by the Allies, but we need Dante's bones. I mean, damn.
Yeah. It's wild. That is wild.
A copy of Dante's so-called death mask has been displayed since 1911 in the Palazzo Vecchio. Scholars today believe it is not a true death mask and was probably carved in 1483 by somebody.
Yeah.
The first formal biography of Dante was the Vita di Dante, also known as the Trattatello in Laude di Dante, which was what I was reading from, written after 1348 by Boccaccio. Although several statements and episodes of it have been deemed unreliable on the basis of modern research, an earlier account of Dante's life and works had been included. in the Nuova Chronica of the Florentine Chronicler, Giovanni Villani. So we've got Villani, we've got Boccaccio. Some 16th century English Protestants, such as John Bale and John Fox, argued that Dante was a proto-Protestant because of his opposition to the Pope. So the Protestants want him. The fascists want him. Mm-hmm. The Florentine Art of Darkness wants him. Dante is a wanted man.
Yeah.
In the 19th century, there was a Dante revival, a product of the medieval revival, which was itself an important aspect of Romanticism. Thomas Carlyle profiled him in The Hero as Poet and in the third lecture on Heroes, Hero Worship, and the Heroic in History. Quoting, "He is world great, not because he is worldwide, but because he is world deep. Dante is the spokesman of the Middle Ages. The thought they lived by stands here in everlasting music." Lee Hunt, Henry Francis Carey, and Henry Wadsworth Longfellow were among Dante's translators of the era. Italy's first dreadnought battleship was completed in 1913 and named Dante Alighieri in honor of him. Space Department. That rocks. He's just like this weeping Italian poet who saw God, and they make a battleship like this is named Dante.
Yeah, that's intense. That's heavy. Yeah.
That is super heavy. Yeah, it'd be like, if they named, it'd be like the, whatever, the U.S., the battleship would be called Melville. I guess it's not unthinkable.
No, right? No.
Yep. On the third, and of course, here we're talking about more than his bones. We're talking about the whole legacy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
On the 30th of April, 1921, in honor of the 600th anniversary of his death, Pope Benedict the 15th promulgated an encyclical named In Proclara Sumorum, naming Dante as one of the many celebrated geniuses of whom the Catholic faith can boast and the pride and glory of humanity. Hmm. I don't think they would ever beatify him, but... Yeah. I mean, you could make a case that the comedy is miraculous. You really could. Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah. In any case, we don't have to get into it.
Yeah.
On the 7th of December, 1965, Pope Paul VI promulgated the Latin motu proprio titled Altissimi Cantus, which was dedicated to Dante's figure in poetry. And that year, the Pope also donated a golden iron Greek cross to Dante's burial site in Ravenna in occasion of the 700th anniversary of his birth. The same cross was blessed by Pope Francis in October of 2020. In 2007, a reconstruction of Dante's face was undertaken in a collaborative project. Artists from the University of Pisa and forensic engineers at the University of Bologna at Forlì constructed the model portraying Dante's features as somewhat different from what was once thought. In 2008, the municipality of Florence officially apologized for expelling Dante 700 years earlier.
Yeah, okay, take your time, guys. Take your time.
He wouldn't grovel. He wouldn't. Yeah. He didn't stand down. And 700 years later, these suckers are apologizing to him.
Could we have his bones? Yeah.
Yeah, right, right. Maybe apologize first.
Yeah. Are you guys done with those up there? Can we have those back?
A celebration was held in 2015 at Italy's Senate of the Republic for the 250th anniversary of Dante's birth. It included a commemoration from Pope Francis, who also issued the apostolic letter Condo Lucas Aeternae in honor of the anniversary.
Hmm.
So Condo, well, Lucas would be light, right? Eternity. So. Condo, probably the poet. Well, in any case, let's translate it. I'm almost done with this part of it. Yeah, dude. I mean, if you're not inspired to read any poetry after this, yes, Splendor of Light Eternal.
Okay.
Was a letter honoring the honoring. Yeah. And that was recently.
Hmm.
Okay. Oh my God. I never want to think about the Guelphs and the Ghibellines again. Now listen to this. In May of 2021, a symbolic retrial of Dante Alighieri was held virtually in Florence to posthumously clear his name. So they're picking up steam. They're realizing what
Yeah.
You done fucked up, Florence. Right, and I appreciate you trying to make good.
Yeah, the Gulf's out of the Gulf still running that place, or what? What's going on already?
I think Dante's cousins outbred everybody else, and now they're in charge. That's what I think.
Dante's the wild goofy and wonderful white Gulfs of West Florence.
Oh man. Yeah. Yeah. Dating her was like dating a Gelf. I don't know what that means.
I don't know what that means. Exactly,
it just sounds funny. Gelf is a funny. Funny. Yeah. Word. So I've got, so this is from placement of people Dante hated in hell. Believe it or not, nice. this is like an essay that you buy for. To like cheat on an exam or something.
Oh, it's like Cliff Notes kind of thing.
Yeah. But let's read a little bit of this because it's quite funny. Let's see. Dante extends his expression of disapproval to citizens of Florence who he felt wronged him or the White Party, though these people received less hatred from Dante than corrupt members of the church. One of these Florentines who he expressed hatred toward is Filippo Argenteni, a member of a family that were political enemies of Dante. And it pleases Dante to see him mangled by a swarm of muddy wraiths. The harsh words and sheer lack of empathy Dante shows clearly proves his feelings toward Filippo, the only soul in hell without strong ties to the church that Dante appears to despise as much as the clergy. Dante's poem. He's right to put that. I mean, the clergy have to be held to a higher standard. So if they're like, it kind of makes sense. Yeah. In Circle 7, Dante visits the usurers, referenced as being of the Ghibelline family of Florence, a connection illustrated by the purse on some of their necks, which shows on a blood-red field a goose whiter than whey. This is the Ghibelline emblem, and by making the family who feuded with the Guelphs the violent against art, Dante not only coincides with fact, as some such as Chiappo Ubracci were indeed usurers, but also Dante makes a political statement about the Florentine family who opposed the Guelphs. Finally, Dante spots Bacca degli Abari in Circle 9, and it denounces him as a filthy traitor. Dante acts aggressively vicious towards Bacca because he acted as a traitor toward Florence in battle. Yeah, I think it's really fun.
That's cool. He's putting these people in there. Now, since you've spent some more time with this, this raises the question. Okay, so Dante's writing this thing about his own passage from heaven to purgatory, or hell to purgatory to heaven. There has to be some consciousness on his part when he's putting these people, these actual people he knows in hell, that there is a sinful quality to what wishing harm on these people, right?
Yeah, I think we would know if he had written about this. It's possible that there might exist some letters or some thinking about it. It's certainly presumptuous.
Right.
Like, I mean, the official doctrine of the Catholic Church is that, like, the church doesn't even claim to know if Judas is in hell, because ultimately, like, it is, you almost would like to believe that the mercy of God is enough that even the worst sinner could, like, there has to be some doctrine. Like, you can't just have everything be willy-nilly, but does the church know for certain? I'm pretty sure the church says, we think Dante's in hell. Not because, or not Dante.
Yeah,
oh gosh, we think that Judas is in hell. Yeah. Not because of betraying Christ, but because of his suicide after would be
I
mean, and again, there's, I don't know if they, I think they may have released, because people ask about this, like what's going on.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's audacious. I think what he did was audacious.
Yeah. And what I was going to get to too is like, does the like, okay, so he puts, well, what am I trying to say? In writing it, he puts these people in hell. That reflects the sort of bitterness and resentment to betrayal he's experiencing in his life. But through writing it, is he sort of exercising that emotion to get to heaven? Do you know what I mean? Like, he recognizes that putting them there is a sin. And then throughout the writing of this, he somehow alleviates himself of that sin.
Fair enough. I don't know. I mean, I think you could certainly make the case that there's a degree of sophistication to this. The fact that he's making it clear that this is all being seen through his own eyes. It's written in the first person.
Right.
So it's his vision of hell.
It's his, and
it's his journey through hell. It's his journey through. The only reason he's able to get through hell is with the help of Virgil, which is his own reason, or which is reason, capital R reason. Then he goes through. I don't know. I mean, you'd have to ask a more serious Dante scholar. But you're right to point that out. It's a very interesting line of thinking. Like how meta was he being? How self-aware was he? And you'd have to think that he'd be very self-aware. I think it's very funny too that like people will write these like rapt statements about how, here's the thinking of the medieval mind in the 13th century, you know, in all its glory and poetry. Like, you don't fucking know that.
Right.
This guy was clearly an outlier.
That's true.
Yeah. Like a genius. Yeah. So that doesn't mean that he represents necessarily like the thought of an age.
Yeah. Like, it's like saying like, well, yes, Albert Einstein is really reflective of the, you know, the European mind in the early
1930s and 40s. Yeah, like, really?
Yeah. No, nobody understood. Weird... They're like four people understood what the hell he was talking about. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I'm not so sure, man. Right. I mean, we can aspire to that, but I think it was probably Dante probably reflected some of the best in people and the thing I don't know, again, you could spend a lifetime picking this thing apart line by line, and I will not be spending my life doing it, but I'm glad that I got to take a little detour. I've got a few more here. Let's see here. Let's get into the clergyman. Dante was undoubtedly infuriated by his banishment. He was a loyal member of the White Party, which had attempted to take a stand against the corrupt papacy. This anger fuels Dante, compelling him to lash out against the affiliates of the church, who he feels the most wrath for. The reader encounters clergymen tortured in hell immediately past the gates when Dante spots Pope Celestine V in the vestibule. Dante proclaims, "I recognize the shadow of that soul who in his cowardice made the great denial." Clear shot at Celestine V, who abandoned the papacy at the advisement of Benedetto, who had become Pope Boniface VIII. By quitting the papacy, Celestine allowed evil and corruption brought about by Boniface to enter the church. Consequently, Dante holds both Celestine and Boniface responsible for the problems in the church, which the White Party fought against. And as a result, Celestine receives torment in hell, while Circle 8 awaits Boniface once he dies. The fact that Celestine is the first soul Dante spots and condemns in hell establishes the tone for the poem and foreshadows the appearance of numerous other clergymen. Putting popes in hell. Dante believes that most clergymen occupy Circle 4, home to the hoarders and wasters. And Virgil confirms this by stating these tonsured wraiths of greed were priests indeed and popes and cardinals. In these clergymen, Dante insinuates, the weed of avarice sows its rankest seed. Condemning a large amount of church officials as guilty of greed further supports Dante's outrage against the church. Sinners guilty of avarice are placed in an early circle of hell, proof that though greed flowing from the corrupt church enrages Dante, he evidently sees further, even more appalling problems in the church worthy of the lower, ghastlier circles of hell. Little more. The encounters with Celestine V and the clergymen in Circle 4 who fell victim to greed set the stage for Dante's experiences in the latter circles. Dante comes upon the Simoniacs in the third Bulgia of Circle 8 and immediately rebukes such sinful actions. Pandering for silver and gold, the things of God. Simony. And this was a big part of the Reformation.
That was kind of the thing that outraged people about the church.
One of the things, if a priest became a bishop by a bribe, that would be an act of simony. So you're becoming, and that was fairly common, and they didn't like that. That was not the right thing to do. So judging by its place in hell, the sins of the Simoniacs are some of the most appalling to Dante. The notion that the souls only temporarily stay in the flaming tube because they are replaced by new sinners portrays the continuous and unending corruption Dante wanted to put an end to. Here he finds a place in his poem to ink the opinions he held long held on corrupt popes such as Nicholas III, who is the recipient of Dante's rant in this Bolgia. Dante rebukes Nicholas, telling him to stay as you are. This whole well fits you. Okay. Well, in any case.
This Pope Boniface was just kind of curious what his deal was. Sounds like a real son of a bitch. Let me just read this better, and we're not going to give you all the references here, right? Because it's kind of it's complicated. But on September 7th, 1303, an army led by King Philip's minister Nogaret and Sciarra Colonna attacked Boniface at his palace in Anagni next to the cathedral. The Pope responded with a bull dated September 8th, 1303, in which Philip and Nogaret were excommunicated. So there was something going on where Pope Boniface was like, French clergy didn't like him for corruption and something. Again, we're not going to get into it, but this part's funny. The French chancellor and the colonists demanded the Pope's abdication. Boniface VIII responded that he would sooner die. In response, Colonna allegedly slapped Pope Boniface, a slap historically remembered as the Schiaffo di Anagni, the Anagni slap. According to a modern interpreter, the 73-year-old Boniface was probably beaten and nearly executed, but was released from captivity after 3 days and died a month later. So, there's some gangster shit going on with Pope Boniface.
They don't make the popes like they used to, man. the church is relatively, obviously, very different now.
When that guy nearly killed Pope John Paul, though?
Early in the 80s
sometime. That's when they started putting him in the tic-tac box. The Popemobile was after that, I think.
Which I was playing for one of those Ulver albums for you. You know that that album, The Assassination of Julius Caesar.
Mm-hmm.
They have the lyrics on that album. There's a song called Transverberation, and the lyric is, "I've been staggering ever since the shot in Rome on Wednesday, May 13th, 1981. And that's the day that the Pope was shot.
They shot the Pope,
Why would you shoot Pope John Paul II? Come on.
I think that was like the guy had like a mental like illness kind of thing. I don't think it was like a strategic like this kind of thing with Boniface.
Didn't the Pope meet with him and forgive him? I think he did.
That's what they taught me in catechism, yeah.
Right, because that's an essential part of the catechism of the Catholic Church.
Well, you know, why'd they shoot the Pope? Kids got questions, you know?
Yeah. Following the shooting, Pope John Paul II asked for people to pray for my brother, whom I have sincerely forgiven. And he met and spoke privately in the prison. And the fellow reportedly kissed the Pope's ring.
Wow. Made him kiss the ring, huh?
Well, he didn't make him do it, but he did. He did do it.
Okay.
Well, you know, the whole hand kissing thing in the church is, they still do it like in Latin countries and other countries. The reason you do it is because the priest's hands are consecrated to God. They have a special consecration where they're, so everything that's done in the church has a reason.
Right.
Almost everything.
Yeah, almost everything.
and for the rest of it,
we've
got Dante and the levels of hell.
Yeah, that's right.
And
that's right.
That is where we will leave this. Thank you, patrons. Brad, thank you for sticking with me on this very long episode. We love you guys. Thank you for supporting the pod. Just stick with us.
Yeah.
Keep the subscriptions rocking. We love it. We appreciate it. You guys rock. We're coming back. We got more core episodes coming soon. We got more dark rooms. We got the book club meeting coming up.
Yep.
You know where to find us. Get in Telegram if you're not already in there. t.me/heartofdarkpod. And man, I'm going to go eat some yummy chicken and I'm not going to think about my eternal reward tonight.
Yeah.
My soul, I'm in a good place, man.
Good.
I don't think you're going to hell, Brad, despite your all of the horrible things you've done.
I might go to that like virtuous pagan part. That's probably where I end up.
Hopefully. And I'm gonna come along following that good banner, Brad, and I'm gonna drag your ass up with me.
There you go. Excellent.
All right. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too, man.
Yeah, take care, buddy.
Bye.